Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Robert Feedback for Cozen O'Connor. Your Honor, we've heard a lot about plans and laws, but before we embark on anything else, I want to say to the Court that at the time of her death, at the time of her untimely death, Ellen Farley was an esteemed and highly valued member of our firm. Your Honor's heard.
Mr. Feedback, I just want to tell you, I sincerely appreciate you saying that. That is very important, and it's a fact that should not be overlooked.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor has heard some difficult issues, but I think the easiest issue in this case is that we are entitled to judgment on the pleadings on our complaint for interpleader, separate and apart from the issue of the cross-claim or counterclaim against us. This is the clearest situation for interpleader. As you've heard from the arguments just presented, there are two claims against this fund, one by Mr. and Mrs. Farley, Ellen's parents, and one by Jennifer Tobitz, Ellen's spouse under the marriage in Canada. We do not have to evaluate the merits of the conflicting claims, and I therefore disagree with the statement I think that Ms. Reneker made that there would be a that there is a colorable claim and that presumably there would be no intervener if there were no colorable claim. That's not to say that there isn't a colorable claim. We take no position on the constitutional issue or as to who is entitled to the money. But we do not under the law have to evaluate the merits of the conflicting claims. There's clearly a good faith concern about duplicitous litigation and multiple liability, and accordingly there should be no issue concerning the complaint in intervener. In fact, I don't think anyone has briefed that the fund should not be interpled. So we ask the court to enter that portion of the order that we submitted, allowing us to pay the benefits into court so that the court can then determine who is entitled to it. Turning now, Your Honor, to the issues with respect to the claims of breach of fiduciary duty, we submit, Your Honor, that Cozen is entitled to judgment on the pleadings. I want to address, as part of my first argument, the question D, whether plaintiff has standing to assert a breach of fiduciary duty claim. There was clearly no standing to assert a claim on behalf of Ellen Farley at the time the pleadings were issued in this case, at the time of the interpleader and at the time of the counterclaim. Since that time, Ms. Tobitz, through her counsel, has advised the court that she has been appointed something called, quote, independent administrator with will annexed, period, close quote. Whatever that means, and whether it does or does not convey standing with respect to this claim, under this U.S. Supreme Court case cited in our brief of Lugin versus Defenders of Wildlife, standing must exist at the time suit is commenced. And at the time, at least, even if you extend that to the time the counterclaim was alleged, there was no standing at that time to allege a claim because Ms. Tobitz had not been appointed anything at the time that the counterclaim was asserted. With respect, Your Honor, to the standing to sue as a beneficiary, as her counsel has indicated, it is a kind of circuitous claim because if she is a she can only be a beneficiary, as we read our plan, if she is determined to be a spouse under the plan. If she is a spouse under the plan, she'll receive the benefits. So as her counsel has indicated, the claim against us for breach of fiduciary duty would be moot. So the entire standing turns on the same question as whether or not she wins on the interpleader. And if she wins on the interpleader, the admission is that the claim would be moot. If she doesn't win because she's not a beneficiary under the plan, as the plan defines it, then she's not a beneficiary and has no standing to sue as a beneficiary. If she does have standing, Your Honor, there was no breach of fiduciary duty. The sole allegation in the complaint is that some Cozen lawyers were present at the wedding, and therefore they knew that Ellen Farley was married to Jennifer Tobitz. Who are they? They're not named in the complaint. Cozen, Your Honor, is a professional corporation. The knowledge of an employee is not attributable to the corporation. So the vague allegation of some Cozen lawyers, without designation of who they were or what standing they had and were they officers of the company or not, that vague allegation is not enough to make the information attributable to Cozen O'Connor. To the contrary, Your Honor, what we've pleaded is that Cozen O'Connor, as an entity, had no knowledge of Ms. Farley's marriage to Ms. Tobitz, and has been indicated by, I think, counsel for both Ms. Tobitz and by the Farleys. Everything that she submitted to us indicated that she was single. She had designated her parents as beneficiaries on her life insurance plan. She had not submitted anything to change those designations. There was a mention by Ms. Tobitz's counsel that in some plans permit medical benefits for same-sex spouses. Our plan, in that section of the plan, does permit medical benefits for even civil union. You don't have to even be married. At no time did Ms. Farley ever file to seek benefits for Ms. Tobitz, so we had no knowledge under that section of our plan either that she was married. And there's no allegation in the complaint that anyone in the management of the firm knew of the marriage. Now, why is that important? Because, Your Honor, under the case law cited at page 17 of our brief, there is an affirmative duty to disclose information only when the trustee knows that silence might be harmful. So therefore, there cannot be a breach of duty based on an affirmative duty, because we had no knowledge that she was married. And under the case law, the only other way that there could be a recovery for breach of fiduciary duty is if there was a material misrepresentation. The case law is a civil beneficiary about his or her benefits to his or her detriment. Your Honor, our summary plan description contains subject to federal law. In fact, she knew enough to know that she had to go to Toronto to get married. But we would submit, Your Honor, that there is, if there is standing, there has certainly been no breach of any duty owed either to Ms. Tobitz as a beneficiary or to Ms. Farley. Now, I want to also address Your Honor's suggested with regard to choice of law. As of the date of death, Your Honor, and it has been indicated, I think, by counsel for the Farleys, there was no difference between Pennsylvania law and Illinois law. So, I think contrary to a statement that was made on behalf of Ms. Tobitz, I believe at the time of death, Illinois did have a little DOMA statute in effect. So we would submit that the court does not have, that's an exercise the court does not have to engage in as to whether or not it's Pennsylvania or Illinois law, because under the standard conflicts analysis, when the two state laws are the same, the court doesn't have to go there.
But how do you deal with the fact that the civil union law?
That came in later. I think we're talking about death benefits.
Yes.
So we're talking about what the status was as of the time of date of death.
That's all right. Thank you.
In any event, Your Honor, we believe there's a reasonable relationship to Pennsylvania law, which is all you need to find. Cozen O'Connor's headquarters and principal place of business are in Pennsylvania. The plan is administered in Pennsylvania. The funds are in Pennsylvania, which was the basis of jurisdiction in this court for the interpleader. Cozen O'Connor, Your Honor, employs 546 lawyers, of whom 248, or about 45%, are in Pennsylvania. We have 21 offices, two of which are in Pennsylvania, 17 in other states, and two international offices, including, as has been indicated, one in Toronto. It's important, Your Honor, that a retirement plan mean the same thing throughout the company, and that an employee of the firm located in Pennsylvania doesn't get treated differently than an employee in another state. And therefore, Your Honor, for all those reasons, I think the choice of law provision in our plan is a reasonable one and one that should be enforced. I would have to disagree, Your Honor, with statements made by both the Farleys and the Tobitzes with regard to the constitutional issue, the importance of the constitutional issue. I respectfully submit, Your Honor, that in order to decide this case, the court does have to decide the constitutionality of DOMA. In fact, it was because DOMA and similar statutes were under constitutional attack at the time of Ms. Farley's death that we decided that the best course of action was an interpleader. The Cozen plan is an ERISA-qualified plan. What that means, Your Honor, is that in order to get the tax benefits and the other benefits of the plan, it has to follow ERISA. If it does not, if we do not comply with federal law, there are terrible tax consequences that follow both from the participants and to Cozen O'Connor. Income and earnings of the plan would be taxable as they are incurred.
I apologize for the interruption, but in terms of benefits to the participant, there would be a difference in the value to a participant who is a spouse who ultimately receives this, as opposed to a beneficiary who might ultimately receive the distribution, or just simply the participants as they go along through life and work.
Your Honor, I'm just saying that if we were to violate ERISA, so that if the plan were not ERISA qualified, those would be the adverse consequences to any beneficiary and to the plan itself. So that if, for example, the plan had to pay income tax on its current earnings on an annual basis, the way you and I pay income on our income, there would be less money in the plan for everybody. Participants would be taxed with the value of their benefits once they became vested, so that Ellen Farley would have become taxed at the time she became vested in her plan without any distribution of the funds to her. Contributions made would become taxable to fully vested participants. You couldn't roll a beneficiary if they left the employee of Cozen and went to work for another company, couldn't roll over their benefits into an IRA, for example, free of taxation. And even in the event of a lawsuit against a participant, the account balances might be reachable by creditors, because these are all benefits that ERISA gives if your plan qualifies. So, Your Honor, we then look at ERISA, because our plan was drafted to comply with federal law. And I'll digress for a moment, Your Honor. As you'll see, I disagree 180 degrees with what's been said about how you would interpret our plan. But our plan was drafted to comply with federal law, because if it doesn't comply with federal law, all these adverse consequences. The drafter of our plan, Your Honor asked the question of what kind of extrinsic evidence you could look to if you determine that there was some ambiguity. The only relevant evidence, Your Honor, would be the testimony of the person who drafted the plan, who's sitting in the courtroom, Mr. Dorsch, who's sitting back in the back of the courtroom. And Mr. Dorsch would tell you, and if you wanted to ask him today, he would tell you that he drafted the plan in order to comport with federal law, and the definitions are there in order to comport with federal law. Now, what does ERISA require? ERISA requires two important protections that are relevant here for spouses. If there is no beneficiary designated, the first default must be to the spouse, and that spouse must be a spouse that's lawful under federal law. If there is a beneficiary other than the spouse, then the spouse must sign off on the beneficiary designation form. Those two are the important, relevant protections of ERISA. Now, I think at this point, Your Honor, it would be helpful if I turn to the plan itself, because there's lots been said about the plan that I think is not 100% accurate. And if we could, Your Honor, I'd like to hand up another copy. It's in the record, but just so Your Honor can sort of follow along the words, because there has been, I think, some.
We'll mark this as COSIN Exhibit 1.
Fine, Your Honor. And it's the copy that's attached to our complaint. If Your Honor would look at page 13 of the plan, section 1.55A defines the word spouse. Spouse means the person to whom the participant has been married throughout the one-year period ending on the earlier of the annuity starting date or the date of death. Then if Your Honor would look at the at page 86 of the plan, construction of the plan. Now, this is not a choice of law. Other people have talked about choice of law and how the statute can impose duties on the plan administrator. This says the plan shall be, section 9.3, this plan shall be construed and enforced according to the code, the act, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, other than its laws respecting choice of law. So the choice of law issue is out under the plan to the extent not preempted by the act. So what we have, Your Honor, is a requirement that the plan be construed according to the federal laws, the Internal Revenue Code and ERISA, or the code and the act that are earlier defined. And under DOMA, Your Honor, DOMA is applicable to every federal law. So that when you read DOMA, you have to read DOMA into the code and the act. And therefore, when you read spouse, you have to read spouse as consistent with DOMA, unless you determine that DOMA is unconstitutional. And the reason for that is because if you do not, if you were to read the word spouse as meaning what Ms. Tobitz argues, then you would come to the conclusion that a same-sex spouse is defined under spouse, and that would make it not conforming to federal law, and that would then make it possible that the COSIN plan would not any longer be an ERISA-qualified plan. Now, if we look at page 60, Your Honor. I'm sorry. We look at page 59 under E. E, if you look at E, which starts out, unless otherwise elected in the manner prescribed in section 6.6, the participant's surviving spouse shall receive a death benefit. If you take all of E, Your Honor, E is in effect mirroring ERISA. That is what ERISA says you have to have. You have to make the first beneficiary has to be the surviving spouse. And under E1, if you're going to have anyone other than the spouse as the beneficiary, the spouse has to sign on the form, which was also not done here. So that is ERISA required, and under DOMA, which is read into ERISA because DOMA by its terms says so, DOMA requires the word surviving spouse to mean spouse of an opposite sex. Now, if you turn then to F, which is on page 60, it applies in the event there is no valid designation form. And again, the first option is the participant's surviving spouse. That, again, is required by ERISA. And again, because it's required by ERISA, we have to read surviving spouse as meaning a surviving spouse of an opposite sex. It can't mean a same-sex spouse, because if it does, then the plan will not be ERISA qualified. Because DOMA says, under federal law, that DOMA applies to every federal law, which includes the Internal Revenue Code and ERISA. That is why, Your Honor, that we believe that you do have to reach the issue of the constitutionality of DOMA in order to resolve whether or not Ms. Tobit's or the Farleys are to get the funds. Now, there's been a lot said about the fact that the Cozen plan could have had, let's say, on page 60, F2 could read the participant's surviving same-sex spouse. It could have, but it doesn't. That's the difference. That's why the arguments of Ms. Tobit's is incorrect. There is no place in here where there's room for her unless you determine that DOMA is unconstitutional, because our plan is drafted in order to comply with ERISA, and as I've said, DOMA requires that we read surviving spouse to include only spouses of an opposite sex. ERISA would not prevent Cozen from including same-sex spouses as beneficiaries as long as it does not include that same-sex spouses in the spousal default provision or in the spousal provision on in Section E.
Do you take Ms. Tobit's position to mean that that should have been done in this document? Separate and apart from
I think she recognizes that we have the right to do whatever we want in a plan. There's no requirement that we do that. And it's possible that after this case is over, we might consider doing that. But certainly the feeling in it within the plan administration is that if Ms. Farley wanted, as a matter of fact, to make Ms. Tobit's a beneficiary, there was nothing to stop her from doing a beneficiary form, as has been argued by the Farleys. But why it's important is because we're now in the default situation. In other words, we are now in a situation where either you have a beneficiary form, and I think the beneficiary form has been challenged by the Tobits also on the issue of whether or not there was coercion. But putting that issue aside, is the change of beneficiary form, or is the beneficiary designation valid where it doesn't have a same-sex, where it doesn't have Ms. Tobit's agreement to the designation? You would have to decide, is she a spouse for purposes of the plan? And she can't be if DOMA is constitutional. And on the other hand, if the beneficiary form is, for whatever reason, disregarded by the court, then you'd get to the default provision. You'd be right back to, is she a spouse under the plan? Your Honor, we respectfully take no position with respect to the questions that you asked under G, H, and I, which go to the constitutionality. With respect to J, Your Honor, question J is whether the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's Defense of Marriage Act controls. If the plan for example, were to be interpreted, suppose you struck down DOMA but didn't reach the Pennsylvania statutes, there would be no terrible tax consequences to Cozen O'Connor. In other words, the adverse tax consequences are only there because of DOMA. They're not there because of the Pennsylvania definition. But the plan clearly does say that in the absence of applicable federal law, Pennsylvania law controls, and or that the plan should be construed under Pennsylvania law. So I believe, although I don't have a strong position on it, it's the DOMA position that is concerns our firm, because if DOMA is constitutional, then we think we can only give the benefits to the Farleys. If the if DOMA is stricken, then we're free to interpret our plan to include same-sex spouses. So I don't have as strong a position on Pennsylvania DOMA, but it does seem to us that given the terms of construction, that you would then have to go to Pennsylvania law and you would have to then face Pennsylvania. But obviously, if you could avoid doing that, you should do that. And we have no position on the constitutionality of Pennsylvania DOMA. If going to Your Honor Kay, you said, assuming arguendo that DOMA and, if appropriate, Pennsylvania DOMA is unconstitutional, whether Cozen O'Connor's actions are redressable. Your Honor, we have not done anything with here other than to offer to pay the money into court and ask the.
I wasn't prejudging when I phrased it.
No, I understand, but I just wanted to say that we're asking the court to make that decision with respect to who gets the money, and that is why we filed an interpleader in the first place, and I think that's perfectly reasonable and acceptable when there are competing claimants, and therefore I would respectfully submit that there is nothing to redress here. Your Honor, thank you very much. I've been able to finish in much less than my 45 minutes.
Thank you very much, but I'm going to ask you to stand by only because I'm going to ask counsel for Ms. Tobitz to respond to the point that the breach of duty claim was brought before the appointment as legal administrator.
Yes, Your Honor.
And does that defeat standing?
Yeah. The case that counsel cited, the Lujan case, is a constitutional standing case. This is a question of statutory standing. And a plan administrator can't defeat statutory standing by rushing into court and getting the case started before there's been a personal representative appointed. So we would disagree with that point. I would also say that under the Luthner case of the Third Circuit, there is standing as a beneficiary, but for a person who, but for the breach of fiduciary duty, would have been a beneficiary, which is Ms. Tobitz's argument for her standing to proceed on her own behalf here. So I think that neither of those arguments has
a beneficiary or as a spouse or both?
As a beneficiary. In other words, in order to have standing under ERISA, she needs to be either a participant or a beneficiary. But what the Third Circuit has recognized in the Luthner case is that if the breach of fiduciary duty is alleged to have deprived the person of beneficiary status, in this case, the argument being that if Cozen had made clear to Ellen Farley that Ms. Tobitz would not be taken care of by operation of the plan terms, but that she needed to submit a beneficiary designation in order to ensure that Ms. Tobitz received the benefit of her plan account in the event of her death, that if the argument being that if Cozen had made that clear to Ms. Farley, she would have designated Ms. Tobitz as her beneficiary, and none of us would be here today. So she would have had standing as a beneficiary.
Okay. Thank you. Let me just ask Mr. Feedback if he wants to address that.
Two responses. One is that we didn't rush into court. There were demands made on us by both Ms. Tobitz and the Farleys to pay the money, and we felt we had an obligation to either pay the money to someone within a very reasonable period of time, or to ask the court to make a determination as to who would get it. Secondly, here, unless the court strikes the change of benefit, the beneficiary form, there is a beneficiary form on the record, and that beneficiary form names the Farleys, not Ms. Tobin's.
Your Honor, would you like rebuttal now?
Let me hear everyone else out for the remainder of the presentation, please.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Is this our break time? All right, this is our 15-minute break time. Let's return by 10 after and begin by 10 after 2, please. 10 after 3. That clock's wrong. Thank you.
All right.